Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, tennis fans from around the globe. The following program is a presentation of the Yellow Ball Network.
Oh, what a shot!
Are we on?
Yep, we're on.
All right, let's go.
Broadcasting live from the Tennis Dynamic Studio in downtown Marietta, Georgia, this is the We Coach Tennis Radio Show on the Yellow Ball Network. Your host for the show this week is J.P. Weber.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the We Coach Tennis Radio Show. Welcome to a great Tuesday here in Marietta, Georgia. We'd love to hear from you. Call us on our Yellow Ball Hotline. The Yellow Ball Hotline number is 646-652-4856. And we attempt to be on every Tuesday at noon. The last few shows I haven't been able to get on at noon. We've been trying to get with some of the guests and do it convenient to their time. And this week I have no guests. It's going to be interesting. Whether or not it's a show of substance or not, that remains to be seen. It's going to be me by myself unless somebody calls in. I'm hoping that we have a few callers in. But at this point, it'll be yours truly. You can download this episode and any of the other episodes off of iTunes. The podcasts are set up there where you can go on iTunes just as you would with any other medium. I think this is one of the best things that's happened in a long time to tennis. There are several shows out there. There's a whole other network. I've created this Yellow Ball Network, and I'd love if anybody's listening and interested in possibly putting a show on the Yellow Ball Network, give me a call. I'd love to try and get another show. Right now, the We Coach Tennis Show is the only show, and I don't mind that. It's actually kind of good. That's the reason I went off on my own, so it's going to have to be a good mix if I can find somebody to be on the show or to create another show. Each week we do, like I said, try to find guests. This week I did not make any effort. The only guest I might have is my son. He's homesick from school, and who knows, maybe I'll get him to join us on the show at some point. Although probably in this day and age that would be a no-no, and I would get in trouble for that somehow. I know things work like that. Anyway, we're going to take a quick commercial break, and when we come back from the commercial break, we'll get into some of the stuff that's going on now in tennis. Be right back.
Doesn't matter if I'm still alive. Hi, this is Coach Chuck Creasy. All of you know that I take pride in calling it the way it is, and boy, oh boy, is it an exciting time in tennis. The 10 and under stuff, the juniors, the pros, and college. If you want to hear the cutting edge of the real stuff and not just the diluted and watered-down fluff, folks, listen to Coach J.P. Weber on the We Coach Tennis program every Tuesday at noon Eastern Standard Time here on the Yellow Ball Network.
Hey, come join us at the Laurel Park Tennis Center for the Marietta Grand Prix Series of Tennis Tournaments. This is J.P. Weber, and the Marietta Grand Prix Series of Tournaments are great opportunities for your kids to get super match play. Match play, lunch, and a chance to earn prizes, all sponsored by the Bryan Brothers Foundation, are all part of these great events. For more information, call 770-919-8602 or find us on Facebook. To register, go to tennisdynamics.net.
She would never say where she came from. Yesterday don't matter if it's gone. While the sun is bright or in the darkest night, no one knows. She comes and goes. Goodbye, Ruby Tuesday. Who could hang a name on you when you change with every new day? Still, I'm gonna miss you. Don't question why she needs to be so free. She'll tell you it's the only way to be. She just...
All right, we're back here. A couple of songs there for a Tuesday morning for you. And we're on the We Coach Tennis Radio Show. The hotline number is 646-652-4856. And... this past weekend, I had an opportunity to go down to Georgia Tech, and we went down there for the Furman match and watched the Tech match. And my son was there to be a ball boy for the match. They have ball boys and ball girls. Patricia Jensen puts that together. She's been along, you know, obviously with her family being involved in tennis, and she's been involved in it for quite some time. She puts that together for them, and each week, or not each week, but during the season, she's got about six matches that she's got set up for the kids, and she brings them in, trains them, gets them ready, gets them set for play. And I personally think that's one of the best promotions that you can do for your program. I'm also impressed with the turnaround. 2 years ago, I went down to Tech to watch a match down there between Miami and Tech. Neither team was ranked in the top 75 at that time. And when the singles went out, there were 11... foreigners on the court, one American, and neither team appeared to me to be adding a whole lot to the games of those players. I doubt many of those players that were on the team back then stuck around, at least not to my knowledge. But now went down, and I think there might be one foreigner or one or two foreigners on both of those teams. Furman's has always had a tradition of having Americans, but Georgia Tech, I don't think they had anything but Americans, and they had quite a few of the kids from Georgia playing on the team in the lineup. It appeared to me. I didn't really. That's one of the problems, I think, with the you know, when you're looking at doing promotions and you're looking at promoting your team, I would say that's one of the, it's a, and we'll get into this a little bit more with one of Coach Creasy's letters, where I think you look at tennis as a, you know, in a team format, in a team setting, such as the college team is, you have that, and then you have the individual players playing. Each one of those individuals, you know, you, as a coach, you're out there trying to get each one of those guys right and ready to play for that week and that match. And so, you know, it's not like basketball where there's a scoring process and you're passing the ball around. It's not like football where you're dependent on this or that. Each player is performing their position in the lineup and playing their match that day. So it still is an individual sport, and they probably ought to try to get some kind of name of the player on the back, something somewhere that could identify who's who on the team. And I think that would go a long way. They do hand out rosters, but there's not pictures with the rosters. So, you know, I suppose you could sit there with your iPhone or something of that nature and try and figure out who is who. But by then, by the time you're done with that, it's tough. I will say Tech, I'm really impressed. Now, they've got a young guy, and I don't know his name right off the top of my head, but a young guy at 2 who is incredible. Eubanks, I believe his name is. Tall kid, probably needs to eat more and get in the weight room, get a little muscle on those legs. But he looks like he's going to be a very solid player. It's an incredible facility. And, one thing that I sort of alluded to earlier, there aren't many schools in this area that are doing a good enough job of getting the recruits, getting the kids from the Atlanta area or the metro area, or the Georgia area, whatever you want to look at it. They're not doing as good a job as they could of getting those players. Georgia Tech's doing a better job of that. Obviously, Georgia's been doing it for a while. So, I'd like to see it done a lot better. But it was a great outing. We went down there. I took some kids down there, met some kids in our program that are down there, and knew some other kids from some other programs that had come, and they'd signed up to ball boy and ball girl. And it's just a shame right now the way that the Georgia Tech I suppose it's the compliance department, the way they're – and again, this is where you have situations where it's gotten, I believe, you know, you let the lawyers and you let the organizations, the big, large organizations, interpret how things should be done, and there's where you get into trouble because, you know, we've seen this, you know, work with the USTA and the way that they run tournaments, and we've seen this now – you know, you're watching this now in the NCAA. Georgia Tech's compliance department is convinced that somehow being a ball boy or being a ball girl is a recruiting violation. And so they won't allow them, if they've entered high school, they're not allowed to be a ball boy or ball girl. And, I think that's probably a negative. So, I'd like to see that somehow change. But again, that's an organizational problem. You've got a school, and you've got a compliance person at that school, and each school leaves that lawyer, I'm sure it's a lawyer, back in the day, if you looked at athletic departments, they were filled with coaches, but nowadays, you've got the attorneys involved in it. So that attorney at that school has determined that if you are ninth grade and up, then you can't be a ball boy or ball girl. Now, and I don't know how it works exactly, but across the country, you know, I think Peter Smith out there at Southern Cal runs a junior academy right there at Southern Cal. I think they do it several other schools. I don't, you know, if it's illegal, I don't want to get them in trouble, but they're teaching ninth grade and up. They're teaching those kids at those schools. So the next thing there's a couple of things I want to get to today. I want to get to the no-ad scoring because there's been a lot of response to some of the stuff that I wrote And then, obviously, Coach Creasy wrote a letter through the MDTA, and I think that goes for Men's Division I Tennis Association. And then I also want to talk about a grand. Let me talk about the Grand Prix that we had this weekend. All right, and I got a coach. I called Coach Creasy and spoke with him over the weekend when we were looking. I think I was calling him about the no-ad scoring situation, but then we talked a little bit about the Marietta Grand Prix. And in the process of talking to him about the Grand Prix, he mentioned to me, you know he wanted to see, or he wanted to see more stuff that was competitive. So, with our Grand Prix, the way that it works is it's a one-day event. We set them up where they're one-day events, and I feel like we've done a great job with those Grand Prix. And I think that on a grassroots level, the way we run the Grand Prix are the way in which the USTA should probably try to win back players in tennis. And they're allowed to check in, or they're allowed to call in and get on the tournament website up until the day before the tournament. We play, sometimes I call it the USTA format. And what we do is we go two all the first set, two all the second set, two all the third set, and that abbreviates the matches and it gets it in. But it doesn't shortchange too much the learning process. The kids can play up to three of those matches, and we've got if you go to tennisdynamics.net, we've got a great leaderboard there for it that we've got set up. We give out a sportsmanship award. We also give out the basket award, but we're able, with the freedom that we have and the ability to take the entries as we see fit, take the players coming in and doing it in a late notice and things of that nature, and we're able to mix and match and do things that we need to. They've turned into great, great events. We have adults with juniors, and then at the end of the day, we are also looking at putting doubles teams together. We don't have a lot of the unrealistic. I think they're unrealistic. USTA rest, situations that you got to have between matches and things. We put them out there. We feed them. We have lunch. So the Grand Prix is a great opportunity for kids to be able to get out there and play, get some match play. But it's also a great opportunity for people who are just starting. We've got it set up where we've got people that are playing in the regular age groups, maybe in the 16s or something of that nature, and we put them in mentoring positions with very young kids who are just beginning. We'll give them extra points toward their Grand Prix numbers if they go out and do extra hitting or a little bit of trying to get the kids to learn to keep score and have it done with someone other than a coach. And we do that at those matches, and it works out great. The Sportsmanship Award, all our awards are really big. They're tall, and there's a lot of room for improvement on those, but we're doing the best we can. I think we got about a 12-by-8 inch plaque for the sportsmanship, and then we offer the basket award, and that basket award is given to the kids, and we named it after Jerry Baskin. Jerry Baskin is a coach here in the Marietta area who, as far as I'm concerned, exemplifies excellence in terms of his work ethic and everything else that they do out there on the court. They spend a lot of time working on the strokes, and of course, to me, the strokes are key for this. So, The Marietta Grand Prix happened this weekend, and it was a super one, and we look forward to hosting another bunch of those this year. And if you didn't know, the Bryan Brothers Foundation has been a sponsor for that for several years. So we're going to real quick take another commercial break. We come back, we'll talk a little bit more about some of the other things going on in tennis today. Hi, coaches and players. If you play on a tennis court in the Southeast, you've probably played on a tennis court designed, constructed, lighted, or resurfaced by courtmakers.com. Marshall Dye and the guys at Courtmakers will work on any type of court. From my experience with them, they work in a professional manner, they show up on time like they say they will, and they never leave a mess. Courtmakers can provide for all equipment needs. Call them at 770-795-8400. 770-795-8400. That's courtmakers.com. All right, we're back. All right, so as anybody, I'm kind of curious if there's any, and we've had one or two callers, and I don't know if I bored them to death or they went off, but they were here and then they were gone. I'd be very curious if anybody had any reaction to the twirling down at the Australian Open. There was a I guess it was somebody with the Australian Open staff, but they had, I guess you would call it a sexist comment, or some people were quite offended by the sexist comment. One of the interviewers on one of the local, I guess, television channels down there in Australia, asked Bouchard out on the court if she would twirl, give us a twirl, I think he said. And I think it was to show off the dress. I don't think it was to necessarily show off the female figure, but I think it was there for the for the dress. At any rate, it caused quite a stir down there. Nadal is looking good. Still on, I believe. Murray is still on. And I was disappointed to see that that Federer lost his match. I was hoping that he would make it through a little bit further. I still think he's got it in him to make it a little bit further. The other matches that I think they're on later today are Djokovic and Wawrinka, and I don't think actually I think Nadal lost earlier today, as a matter of fact. So I think Nadal is out. So it'll be interesting. Another gentleman this week passed away. Longtime coach Steve Wilkerson at Gustavus Adolphus College, and he was in Minnesota. And for years, you would pick up a one of Bob Larson's college tennis books. You'd pick it up and look, and in it, he would be featured in something. He was an amazing coach. He did quite a bit. He ran his tennis and life camps, I believe, up there at the school, and he was there for close to 40 years. And so we lost another big name in coaching. Speaking of coaching, I have no idea why, but I think Burdich is still trying to get Lindell to coach him. Lindell's facility over in Hilton Head, if I'm not mistaken, closed. So that's gone. And so there's quite a bit going on. I don't know who's going to win. I guess I would pick, at this point, Djokovic for the Australian Open. Let's see. Is there anything else going on I can think of? Not right now in tennis. Let me go to something that I want to talk about with regard to the USTA and with our tournaments and things that are going on in the U.S. What I would like to see happen, and this can be for the day, this can be my 78-foot soapbox. It'll be a real short one. But what I'd like to see happen is that the USTA makes a distinction between performance and participation. If you go to their website, if you look at their website and you see what they've got on it, they have a lot of stuff that's promoting participation, even where it's it may even be regarding performance categories. They've got, you know, what appears to me to be the promotion of participation. And while that is important, I think you have mixed messages. If you're going to do the USTA player development, then what you probably need to do in addition to that is separate the people at the USTA who are looking at increasing performance. I mean, if you're looking at doing better on the performance side and you're looking at trying to also build participation, I think those two sometimes can run in conflict with one another. And I think that's where the USTA gets itself into trouble on various things. I'd like to see them divide the website up. I'd even like to see them completely have different offices in different areas that they don't overlap as much as they do. I think a lot of times we see the rules and things that get put into place, and I think they come from the participation side. So to me, it's very important to try and get the participation side separate from the other. It causes problems for on the performance side when you've got the things that encourage participation in terms of short scoring, in terms of rest breaks and all those things that make it enjoyable at the lower level tournaments. And if they pervade up into upper level tournaments and things of that nature, which they do sometimes, I think it makes it difficult for coaches to be able to develop the players. So that's one of the things, and that's my 78-foot soapbox for this week. Let's try to get off of that. Again, we're going to take another real quick commercial break, and we come back, we will get into the no-ad scoring situation.
can't see the market mind. I'm only the underline.
I can't think of a better place to go than Courtmakers.com for any of my court equipment needs. Any kind of equipment that you need for your club or facility. Windscreens, nets, net straps, benches, scoreboards. You can find all of this at Courtmakers.com. Or like them on Facebook and see all the latest stuff that they're doing in court construction, resurfacing, and lighting. That's Courtmakers.com, Courtmakers.com.
Hi, this is Coach Chuck Creasy. I take great pride in calling it the way it is. It's a meat and potato principle of coaching that no one really cares what you know unless they know that you care. As a parent also, I want this and very skilled hands working with my youngster. Coach J.P. Weber's 30 years of experience speaks for itself. Go see him at Laurel Park in Marietta, Georgia. His website is tennisdynamics.net. Tennisdynamics.net.
If I make a mark in time, I can't see the mark in mine. I'm only the underline. Like him, just like you, I can't tell you what to do. Like everybody else, I'm searching through what I've heard.
Whoa, where do you go when you don't want no one to know? Who told tomorrow Tuesday's a day?
The future, won't you paint my dream? Won't you show me where you've been? Show me what I haven't seen to ease my mind. Yes, I will learn to understand if I have a helping hand. I wouldn't make another demand all my life.
Whoa, whoa, where do you go when you don't want no one to know? Ooh, don't tomorrow, Tuesday's the day.
Alright, we're back. Okay. Alright. So, live radio, and we're going on here, and we're on the We Coach Tennis Radio Show. If you'd like to call in, the number is 646-652-4856 at every Tuesday at noon. And so, today we've got no guest, and I'm rambling along here. We've been talking about a couple of different things, and I wanted to get on now to no ad scoring. I went down to Tech this weekend, and I watched the matches. And what I did, there's a ball boy room over there, or there's a room over there where they do alumni events and things of that nature. But if the alumni aren't there, the kids use it. And I was able to go in and sit and watch the match from that room. Now, it's got glass, and you can look out from that glass. You know, I will say, while it is a gorgeous facility, they've got two things. That room, the way it extends down, is weird. It's only to one half. And then in their indoor facility, instead of extending down all the way behind all of the courts, they are down and behind just three of the courts. And then the other three, you can't get behind. You got to look at them from a distance. So, you know, as much money as they put into it, as much money as they spent, that, you know, that particular spot there where that ballroom is in an odd position. And then from a fan standpoint, being able to see the matches, and it was in a weird, it's just a weird setup. At any rate, so I go down there, and I sit in that room. Now, when you sit in the room, you're close, you're right on top of court number one, you're looking down, maybe on, let's say, one side at the service line all the way down across the courts. You can't hear anything. It's pretty soundproof. If a guy hits an overhead, it can smack up against the window. You can hear that. But other than that, you're in that room, and all you can do is see what's going on. So I'm in there, and I'm watching. And again, I'm looking. I went down to see what I could see with regard to NOAAD. I wanted to see what it was going to be like, see if there was going to be a big difference. Obviously, I was down there. My son was ball boying as well. But I wanted to see what it was going to be like. And at the time, I didn't think that anything of it. But sitting in that room, I got an interesting perspective on it. You can see everything, but you can't hear anything. Excuse me. So as I'm sitting there watching the matches, there's nobody in the chairs. Apparently, there was a communication problem. The umpires were down there earlier in the day for the girls' matches, and then after the girls' matches were over, they left, and there was no communication to get it right. I think they changed times. At any rate, so you've got a match between Furman and Georgia, pretty, you know, fairly competitive. I think in my mind, watching it, I never thought Georgia Tech was going to lose. They did lose the doubles point. And again, I tended to think it's very quick. Let's start out with that. Very quick. For me, there was no development, anything. About the time that you're really getting into it, it's over. And especially with the NOAAD. About the time that you're getting into the flow, you know, I like to say that there's ebb and flow to matches. There was no add and there was no flow. No ebb, no flow, no add, no flow. They kind of go together. And so watching the match, it was that doubles was different. Then they went out for the singles, and they played the singles. And again, they've got something that they've added to it, which is they're not, or they didn't add to it, they're taken away. Now, I always thought what they've done is this. They decided to do no break in between the singles and the doubles, or at least not very significant break, maybe 5 minutes. Hopefully they can hold it to 5 minutes. If they're going to do that, they need to hold it. I'd even hold it less. If I were a coach of those teams, I'd have my players out there hitting with one another. I'd have my players. There's nothing you're going to say that you shouldn't have already said or gone through or can't sit down with them and talk about on the changeovers. And I tell you this, they're playing the doubles. It's about a good warm-up. That's about what it is. It's kind of messing, you know, it's interesting. They may have to have, and it may create more, you know, it actually may create more double specialists. If you can get some guys that can come in there and volley and they've got a big serve, or, you know, and they can just make a good showing at the net there, you may find, and I think that's what happened for, in large part, I think it won doubles for them. You can pretty much count on, you know, not, you know, you might win the doubles point with that sort of stuff. You're not going to lose much if you lose it in terms of condition or anything of that nature. But they were out there, you know, as I'm looking at this and I'm talking about, we got there an hour early and they were out there an hour early warming up and then got into the doubles match, and it takes a little while to get into that, and then they don't have the warm-up in between. So I understand all of that, but if you're playing, I don't know. I think I would probably skip the break and have them out there almost ready to go like Nadal does between points, rushing out and ready to go and jump on the other team early. That might be one aspect of it. And it may seem like a risk to do that, but the whole thing is a risk. You know, when you're watching it, there was at no point really that I thought, looking at the courts, that Tech should lose the doubles. They did. And then they lost it at one. They lost, I think Tech won it three, lost it one and two in the doubles. Or maybe one, maybe lost three and one, two, lost three and one. So they come back out for the singles. Nobody's in the chair now all through this. So one of the things that they've sold is the excitement of, I take that back. There actually was one official who got there after the doubles was almost over, and he got involved toward the end of the doubles there. But so one of the things that they do with no ad is they sell the idea of someone's got to be in the chair. And they're in the chair, and they're holding up the red card, and they're calling it out. That's what makes it exciting. But if you're in that little bubble, so to speak, that little bubble room, you're in there, and the balls are, you know, flying up from overhead and things of that nature, but you don't hear anything else, all you're seeing is the points being played, and there's no ebb and flow. There's no tug. There's no pull between a deuce and an ad point, a deuce and an ad point. It gets to a three-all point. It happens quickly, and then it moves on. So, you know, that's one of the things. If you look at it purely on that level, you know, it gets to a crescendo almost and then over, crescendo and over. And where, you know, I've sat in that bubble room before and not had any sound and watched a match, and sitting in that room and watching it in that instance, you can see, you know, quite a bit going on when you have the deuce ad and the tug back and forth. So, looking at this reform a little bit more, you've got, here's my take on it. I tend to think that it is a blunder. I think it's a blunder on the part of the ITA, and I think it's a blunder in that they're being influenced by, there are marketeers who are involved in looking at why participation is low in tennis. And when they look at why participation is low in tennis, one of the things they point to is that the time constraints on tennis are too much. And there are ways that you could probably solve that without changing the scoring system, where you had those little battles, those little mini battles within the larger battle of either the set or the match or the whole tie or the whole dual match between two teams. So it's interesting that they've chosen to do this. Now, it's interesting they've chosen to do this because they've shortened the doubles. And I still, for the life, I did have an opportunity. I spoke with, I'm down there watching the match, so I get on the phone, I call one of my buddies, and he's on the ITA committee that made this change, and so he and I are talking. He got a little irritated with me because he can't understand the opposition to it. He can't understand the opposition to it at all, and I just think there's a big difference of opinion on it. I don't think that there are as many people that are truly for it. I don't even think he's really for it. In fact, he is not really for it. And he came out and he said it for me, but he said this was the compromise they had to make. And this is the same compromise that they made. And my question to him is this going to be it? Is this going to be the end of it? The shortening of the match now is a second or third shortening of matches. And since it's short here, is that going to be the end to the shortening of tennis matches? And I tend to doubt it. So I think that there are many ways, and that's my point. You know, I said to him, I said, look, coach, there are many other ways, you know, that they can do a better job of getting fan participation and making themselves relevant on the campus and in college athletics. And none of it has to do with changing the way in which the scoring goes. I'd almost be for something where it's simultaneous. But I don't like switching it. So, you know, you look at it and you wonder, you know, one of the things that they originally came out with, now if you look at, and the reason I brought the setup, there's no good place to be able to move in to a match at Georgia Tech and be able to show indoors, and I mean half the country's indoors at this time, and a good portion of the country is indoors until March. A good portion of the United States is indoors playing these matches until March. So if you're going to show television tennis and you're going to show collegiate tennis on television, you know, it's a difficult event to put on television. And part of the reason is because it's expensive, and part of the reason is because you can't get one camera back and then numerous cameras in to match it all out. So I'm not so sure that this whole idea about the television, I do believe that it will be streamed. I do believe it's very easy. And as a matter of fact, at the match, you could see at the back of the court, they've already got closed circuit television set up at the back, cameras at the back of each of the courts there at Tech. So when you go, you can see that. So when you when we look at these matches and when we go to these matches, I think that, you know, when we talk about television being part of it, and this is one of the premises that they gave, it's funny, the same guy who talked to me about this on the phone as I'm watching the match said, well, no, television's out now. So, you know, as they're putting it forward, as they're going forward with it, they're talking television. When they finally get it, they admit that television is probably not going to be the biggest thing. It's probably going to be streamed. If it's streamed out, then there's no reason to change the format, the scoring. So that's a difference that I've seen. So, you know, and then, you know, to me, if you're looking at this, look at World Team Tennis and look at how that is. That's the ultimate in the entertainment. You've got an entertainment format right there, World Team Tennis. And for years and years and years, World Team Tennis has been supported and held up and kept going through promotion and marketing and other favors that the USGA has done for them. It's not something that a large number of people want to go out and watch. So for me, you can look at that, and then you can also see one of the things that they wanted to do in order to make pro doubles more relevant, more important to the people and players, was they wanted to have it they wanted to make it shorter, and then by making it shorter, we get on television more. I haven't seen that. I haven't seen where it's made it any more relevant, and it's been on TV anymore. As a matter of fact, it was on television, at least when I was growing up, I think a lot more even than it is now. There is, I do believe also, there is a element which I would refer to with no ad, you know, of chance. I think on the We Coach Tennis site just recently, Dr. Brown put something up there with regard to the no ad, and his contention was that no ad inherently has more of a factor of chance in it than it does compared to that with ad. In other words, with ad, the chance factor is half of that with no ad. You don't have as much that's going to be given a chance, and part of that is because you've got to win two in a row in order to win a game. And so if you go to no ad, now you have chance, or, you know, a missed call, a let cord. Now, you know, they got no ad and let cords that they play in college tennis. So on a three all point, you know, you get a net cord or something of that nature, and it's really up to chance. And so for me, that takes away from the skill portion of it. So, you know, when you're looking at it from a standpoint of whether it's fair or not. But just recently too, now I just got a copy today of Chuck Creasy's letter. I believe it's to the MDTA, and he goes through in his letter you know, he makes the differentiation between tennis being an individual sport that has some team opportunities, and it's a team sport looking for individual opportunities, and he's looking at it that we've approached it wrong. Let me put it to you that way. It's an individual sport that has some team opportunities, whereas we have wrongfully approached tennis as a team sport looking for individual opportunities. So he also makes a distinction in the letter that the scoring system and format are two completely different issues. And he goes into that. And he takes on this idea that I've been talking about for quite some time. And that is one way of looking at this is for pure entertainment. They made the change under pressure from the USTA to do it and try to do it, and they're following this whole idea of entertainment. And if you are a pro at a club and you put together a round robin or something of that nature, you use NOAD because it increases the entertainment value. There's no education value to that round robin in that sense. You're there for a social event. You're there for a social situation, and you've got it set up so that everybody finishes about the same time, and it works real nice in that sense, and that helps from the entertainment standpoint. And that is where I think the biggest influence on this came from, was from the guys who are the marketeers within the USTA, and they've been able to put their influence out, and I've been able to see it in some of the emails that have been passing back and forth through some of the quintessential marketeers of the game in the U.S. are the people who are looking at this purely from a marketing standpoint. Now, these same people that are marketeers are concerned about the bottom line, and oftentimes it's their own bottom line. It's not the bottom line of whether or not it's going to be anything good, or whether it's going to take, it's going to be a quick bottom line for them. And so these guys have been able to put their influence in, and when they do, it's void of coaching influence, because when you look at this and you look at it closely, it takes out conditioning, it brings in chance, and it may create what they want to say parity, but I don't think it's parity as much as it is. It's in a sense, to a certain degree, in my intuition, you know, dumbing it down. There's not the depth. There's not the additional need for being in shape and for fighting through in a game, certain game. Might be a tough round in boxing where you're having that tough round. So, you know, while there is an entertainment factor about it, I don't think that's the entertainment stuff. At least when I was coaching college tennis, I don't think that's the entertainment stuff that they need to be involved with. They need to be involved more, if they're looking at this the right way, with the developmental part of this and the educational part of this with regard to college tennis. And let me say this. When I was on the phone, when I was talking with a guy from the NCAA board committee that put this together, they made it clear. He made it clear to me. He said, look, we didn't care about junior tennis, and we didn't care about other, you know, sectors of the industry. We wanted to focus on college tennis and what's best for college tennis. But in that view, in that narrow view that they have, they've put blinders on, and they know, and I know, and everybody knows that in the end, while it helps with time, it gets this mysterious 3-hour number, the 3-hour time limit that they have on college tennis. By the way, the Furman match against Georgia Tech, it was only 2.5 hours. About might even been a little bit less. Might have been 2 hours and 25 minutes, and much less of that was actual play. But that was 2 hours and 25 minutes for singles and doubles and the break in between, and that was 6 matches, all done. Some of them were done sooner. So while it adds to the entertainment factor, it adds to the time element, it takes away from, I think, the image of tennis. I think it hurts the image of tennis. I think all these scoring changes hurt understanding, you know, the basics of keeping the score. I don't think you get your money's worth anymore when you go to a match. If you're a little bit late, you're going to miss it. You're going to miss it. Whereas, you know, that's my thing. It doesn't promote as much as it should the educational portion. So if I had suggestions, instead of doing this, one of the things that I would do, I'll tell you real quick, and I've got a few minutes left, and I know probably a good portion of you, if you haven't turned off and you're still with me, I think it's fantastic. It's great. You're a little bit nuts if you've stayed with me. If not, I can understand why you might have tuned out by now, because I've gone on for quite some time. But look, they need to start matches and play matches. Here's my suggestion. Look, number one, they need to start matches and play matches at a time when fans can get there. Right now, they don't have the matches set up. The next match where they've got ball kids and the next match where it would be worth it to have somebody watch it on television, it's on a Friday night in the Atlanta area, start at 5 o'clock. It's in downtown Atlanta at 5 o'clock, and that's probably across the board with all of these matches. The way that the college coaches schedule these matches, they need to get something where they've got these are the hours and these are the times that you need to schedule tennis matches so that you can get kids, parents, and everybody else to come out and watch matches. That's number one. They got to get it right. Number two, they need to identify the players. If you don't put the names on the backs of the jerseys, then what they need to do is put a plaque at the end of each court, and they need to have that plaque with the player's name on it, maybe the color of the team or something of that nature, that identifies it. Now, I would much prefer for television purposes, I would like to see them do television format and do this format and do it for television, and then you can get it on. They've got to go around, you know, my next suggestion would be they've got to get out as teams. These are key things that they need to do. They can create a festive atmosphere. They can do all the different kinds of things that they want to do at the matches. You know, I think tech's going the wrong way. They're going to do some kind of corporate thing where they're going to have corporate. I think they need to do a lot more fun stuff. They need to create, you know, mini tennis upstairs, you know, or, you know, outside on the sidewalks, create mini tennis courts and have mini tennis challenges. And they need to do things of that nature. I love the idea of having all the shirts, you know, shorts, you know, some kind of something, make sure that they know that, you know, not only is it the name of the player, but also to make sure it's the color, you know, get your uniform such that they do that. They need to have the players available every time with posters and things, and when the match is over, to hit with the kids, and they need to appear together for autograph sessions. And I got to hurry here. Okay, they need to make sure the doubles, they need to make sure that the kids, if they're scrubs or whatnot, they need to get around to all of the different clubs and all the different academies in the area and get that, you know, get out there and do a kids' day, do something where they show, and maybe even do a lot where they showcase the doubles at those deals and play doubles with those kids and do things of that nature. So those are the things that I'd love to see happen. Those are some of them. I suppose if I had a few more minutes, I could, you know, name a dozen other things that they could do. But, you know, that's it for me. This is the first show I've done with me all by myself. Actually, James was here with me the whole time listening. I'll get a critique from him later about how it went. But this has been the We Coach Tennis Radio Show, and I hope you tune in. And if you have any reaction to my show, post it on the – if it was horrible, post it on We Coach Tennis if you listened to it. If you didn't listen to it, but you get it later, let me know. Give me some feedback on some of this stuff that I spoke about. All right. We'll see you next week.
This has been the We Coach Tennis Radio Show on the Yellow Ball Network. Check in here with us every Tuesday at noon and listen to another great coach talk about what makes their program a success.